Hi, everybody, and welcome to Supernatural Podcast episode number 9 for Phantom Traveler, which originally aired in the US on October 4, 2005. This episode is particularly timely for me since I flew to Chicago for the weekend. I apologize for the delay in getting the podcast out to you since the wedding and work took most of my time last week and so on. There was something kind of spooky or eerie about watching this episode while I was flying and writing the review of it. It was just kind of bizarre, but it was fun nonetheless. Unlike Dean, I really like to fly. There's just something really cool about being that high up and seeing the landscape pass you by and so forth. For any of you who like to fly, you probably understand. In the interest of time, and since we've all seen the episodes, I'm going to start cutting down the recaps for the reruns and do a more thorough job when the new shows start in the fall. I think that the episode recaps have been running a little long, and it's becoming a little tedious, so I'm going to try to cut that down, although there's so much cool stuff to talk about, it's hard to cut it back. So, with that said, let's jump into the recap. It opens in an airport. A man is very nervous about his flight, and he goes to the bathroom to put water in his face. Just then, we see the black demon mist enter into the eyes of the man. We see a flight attendant named Amanda greeting the passengers, and she sees the man board with the demon black eyes. About 40 minutes in, the man gets up to stretch his legs and walks over to the emergency door. Another man sitting in the aisle notices him reach for the emergency lock and shouts at him. Demon Man looks at him with his black demon eyes and opens the lock. Immediately, he and the door are thrown from the plane, and the tail wing is broken off. Everyone panics, and oxygen masks drop from the ceiling. The plane is going down. So it cuts to a hotel room where Dean is asleep. Sam comes in with breakfast, and Dean awakes. Sam tells him, "Good morning, sunshine." It's 5:45 a.m. Dean asks Sam if he got any sleep, and he says yes. Dean tells him he's lying since he was up at 3 a.m. and Sam was watching George Foreman infomercials. It's been a while since Sam had a good night's sleep. He's having nightmares about Jess and about the job. Dean is keeping a knife under his pillow, which is not due to fear, but as a precaution. So Dean gets a call from Jerry Panowski. Dean and Dad helped him out a couple years ago with a poltergeist thing in Kittanning, Pennsylvania, and the boys go to meet with him. Jerry tells Sam that Dad talked about him all the time and was so proud of Sam going to college. He asks where Dad is, and Dean tells him he's wrapped up in a job. Jerry tells him that they got Sam instead, so it's an even trade. "No, not by a long shot," says Sam. So we see some of his insecurities kind of come out in this little bit here. They go into Jerry's office and listen to the recording from the black box. The plane crashed 200 miles from where it took off. The recording has all sorts of static interference, like when the ceiling demon is around and the effect it has on the radio. They're saying it's mechanical failure and the cabin depressurized somehow, and out of over 100 on board, only 7 survived. Pilot Chuck Lambert is one of them and a good friend of Jerry. Jerry does not think it was an accident. The boys ask for passenger manifest lists of survivors and to look at the wreckage. Jerry says that the first two are okay, but he doesn't have clearance to see the wreckage. So it cuts to a copy store where Dean has been making fake IDs, this time those of Homeland Security. Sam tells him that's pretty illegal, even for them. But Dean tells him that since Homeland Security is new, not a lot of people have seen them, and so they won't notice, really, that they're fakes. Sam tells Dean where he ran... he shows him that he ran an audio filter over the EVP, and a voice had said, "No survivors." But there were 7 survivors from the crash. They talk about a long history of spirits and death omens on planes, ships, means of transportation. Phantom travelers on Flight 401, where they use the remains of a crashed flight in other planes, and then the spirit of the pilot and co-pilot haunted those planes. They make a plan to see survivors, starting with Max Jaffe, who is at Riverfront Psychiatric Hospital on self-admission. Max tells them about the man's black eyes and about him opening the emergency exit door. Now, no human could have been able to open that door, since it's over 2 tons of pressure on the door at that time, and the man was sitting right in front of him on the flight. So they're able to pin down, based on seat assignments, who actually was. They go to the house of George Phelps, where they talk to his widow. George was as normal as they come. They decide to go see the wreckage, and Sam says they need to look the part. So we see them leaving a tailor in brand new black suits, paranoid by Black Sabbath's plane. Dean says he looks like one of the Blues Brothers, which is a reference, of course, to the classic 1980 film with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. They show their badges and are admitted into the see the wreckage. Dean pulls out his homemade EMF reader. "Why does that one look like a busted up old Walkman?" Sam says. "That's what I made it out of. It's homemade," Dean responds, smiling. Sam implies that it's really uncool, and Dean's sad puppy face is heartbreaking. He's so proud of his device. They locate some residue in the emergency door handle and take a sample. Just at that moment, two Homeland Security guys show up. Like, the real deal. They realize that Sam and Dean are imposters and rush in to apprehend them. But Sam and Dean have just exited the building and are walking away when they hear the sirens, so they jump the fence and escape. We see Chuck Lambert talking to a man about a flight they have in a few minutes. Chuck is apprehensive, but agrees. The other man leaves, and the demon mist enters Chuck's eyes. So back to Jerry's office, he's examining the residue evidence under a microscope and tells them it's sulfur. Few things leave sulfur residue like demonic possession. That would explain the ability to open the emergency hatch. This goes far beyond floating over a bed or barfing pea soup, Dean says. It's a reference to The Exorcist. The demon actually used a person to take down a plane. Neither brother had ever heard of something like this. So back to Chuck and his first flight since the crash. His mood is different now that he's possessed. Once up for 40 minutes, the demon takes over and crashes the plane. Sam is on the computer doing research, and we see a variety of drawings pinned up around him. All cultures believe in some kind of demonic possession. In Japanese culture, they believe that certain demons are involved with natural occurrences like earthquakes, and man-made disasters like plane crashes. Dean says that it's not their normal gig. Demons do not want anything, only death and destruction, and this is big. Oh, a bit of foreshadowing here? Perhaps we'll talk about this later. Jerry called Dean to tell him that Chuck died in a small plane crash about 60 miles away in Nazareth. Oh, the irony. They go to check it out and bring evidence back to Jerry. More sulfur. The crashes both happened at 40 minutes into the flight. 40 is, in biblical numerology, it means death. Six crashes over the last decade have all occurred at 40 minutes into the flight, and none of the flights had any survivors. So this is from Sam's research. So apparently the demon is going after all the survivors to finish the job. Sam calls all the survivors to see if they're flying anytime soon, and none are, except flight attendant Amanda. They rush to catch her before her flight. Working man is by rush as plane. They catch Amanda's flight just as it's starting to board. So Dean pages her and says that he's Dr. James Hetfield, a reference, of course, to the lead singer of Metallica, and tries to postpone Amanda from boarding the plane. She is departing at gate 13. It's one of those superstitious numbers. We'll talk about that later. And we see the demon mist in the vent. So, cuts to Dean, who's pacing the floor, thinking of a plan. Okay, it's time for plan B. We are getting on that plane. But Dean is really apprehensive when Sam tells him that they're boarding a plane. He says, "I kind of have this problem with," and Sam cuts in, "flying?" "Well, it's never really been an issue until now," Dean says. "You are joking, right?" "Does it look like I'm joking? Why do you think I drive everywhere, Sam?" So in this moment, we see that, for the first time, Dean really does have a major limitation. He has this fear of flying. But he finally agrees, and we see them on the plane. Dean is really freaked out. They take off. Dean hears a sound on the plane. His eyes get really wide. Sam sees the look, smiles, and looks away. Just love Jensen's looks and acting during this episode. He had really great facial expressions. Dean is humming Some Kind of Monster by Metallica to calm himself down. And Sam tells Dean that the demon will go after someone with an addiction or under emotional distress or the like. And they wonder if it's Amanda, since it's her first flight after the accident. Dean heads back to talk to Amanda and test her mental state. He's about to bring some holy water, but Sam tells him to be subtle. If she is possessed, she will flinch at the Latin name of God, which is Christo. So Dean talks to Amanda for a minute, and she is really calm. Christo has no effect on her. He gets back to his seat and tells Sam that she has to be the most well-adjusted person on the planet. They encounter some turbulence, and Dean freaks out again. Sam tells him to calm down. Dude, the touchy-feely yoga self-help crap is not helping. Sam tells him that in his condition, he opens himself wide to demonic possessions and to calm down. Dean takes some deep breaths, and Sam tells him about the exorcism he found in Dad's notebook. It has two parts. The first is to expel the demon from the victim's body, and this will make it stronger. How does it become stronger? Sam explains that it does not need to possess anyone, it can wreak havoc on its own. Part 2. Destroy the demon and send it back to hell. So Dean scans the plane with his EVP tape player thingy, with no luck. Just then, the meter goes off as the co-pilot steps out of the bathroom and smiles at Dean and Sam. Dean looks at him and says, "Christo." The man looks at him and voila, demonize. So the boys go to find Amanda and ask her help. "What's up?" she asks them. Dean tells her, "This is going to sound nuts, but we just do not have the time for the whole truth is out there speech." Sam jumps in, saying, "Look, we know you were on flight 2485. Amanda looks a bit weirded out, saying, "Who are you guys?" They tell her that something brought down the other plane, it's going to happen again here, blah, 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 and they need her help. They tell her that Chuck Lambert is dead of yet another plane crash. She looks confused, but proceeds to tell them about the man with the demon eyes. They tell her they need to talk to the co-pilot and do anything to get him to force him to leave the cockpit. When she resists, they tell her that there is a lot at stake here. She agrees and gets him to go to the back of the plane where they're waiting. They jump him, cover his mouth, and douse him with holy water. Sam tells Amanda to wait outside and to not let anyone in. Dean restrains the demon man, and Sam performs the exorcism. The demon tells Sam that he knows what happened to his girlfriend. They finish the first part, and the demon vapor disappears in the ventilation. The plane starts to descend rapidly and will crash if they do not fix it. Dean's in the corner, screaming, and Sam finally reaches the journal and continues the exorcism. A bolt of lightning hits the plane, and everything goes back to normal. So cuts to the airport, and the police are interviewing the survivors. The co-pilot tells them that he does not even remember boarding the plane. Amanda's talking to an FBI agent and looks at Sam and Dean, mouthing the words, "Thank you." Dean nods to her and says, "Let's get out of here." "Dean, it knew about Jessica," Sam says. "Sam, these things read minds. They lie. That's all it was." So Dean tries to reassure and upset Sam, but it doesn't really work. Cuts to Jerry's workplace again. "Nobody knows what you guys did, but I do." Jerry thanks them, and they head out. Dean asks him how he got his cell phone number, since he's only had the number for about 6 months. Jerry said he called Dad's phone, and the voice message told him to call Dean's number. So, does that mean that Dad's still alive? Well, of course, we know he is, but that's a really big realization during this episode. And so we see the boys on a service road near the airport, and Dean calls Dad's number again. They get a recording to call Dean at 866-907-3235. Incidentally, this number was set up as a real number, with a recording by Jensen telling you that you've reached Dean Winchester. It was set up by the WB. I think that's pretty cool. I didn't call it, but I learned about it later. So they get in the Metallic car and leave town. And that's the end of the episode. So let's move on to the analysis and talk about a moment about Dean and his fear of flying. As a psychology student, I've studied specific phobias, and flying is very common. My mom has the same fear. So let's look at all the possibilities for Dean's fear of flying. Now, flying is considered to be one of the safest forms of transportation currently available in the U.S. Statistics compiled by the Department of Transportation led to the conclusion that airline travel is actually 29 times safer than driving an automobile. And generally, people who experience a fear of flying report two basic kinds of symptoms. One, physiological reactions to fear and stress include muscle tension, tremors, heavy breathing, heart palpitations, and chest pain, abdominal and intestinal discomfort, sweating, weakness, dizziness, dry mouth, or flushed or pale face. And the second are psychological symptoms, which include impaired memory, narrowed perceptions, and poor or clouded judgment. So clearly, the fear of flying can be associated with many symptoms. You might even experience some of these symptoms in situations other than flying and not be nearly as incapacitated as when you're flying in an airplane. In fact, this is the whole key to the problem. In other situations, you have much more freedom to change things. If it's stuffy in a car, you can open a window. You can talk to the driver. You might be the driver. Even riding in a bus or train is usually less troubling than flying. The reality is that flying can make you feel trapped. Trapped in an airplane until it lands. And so it might be said that your symptoms are out-of-control reactions to feeling trapped and out of control. I think Dean's fear revolves around his need to be in control. He has always been there to look out for Sam and takes charge. And in an airplane, a passenger is completely helpless and cannot control any of the surroundings. And there's no escape route. The demon in this episode can be compared with the ceiling demon. Dean says that demons do not want anything, only death and destruction. But the ceiling demon seems to want something and is not focused on death and destruction, that they're just sort of an after effect of what's going on. And so it's interesting to see. This might be a little bit of foreshadowing, or maybe it just helps sort of set up the whole ceiling demon concept. And I can't help but compare this episode with the movie Final Destination. In the movie, a group of teenagers are on a flight from New York to Paris when one of them has a premonition that the plane will crash. So he causes a ruckus, and several of the students are asked to leave the flight. When the plane takes off, it does crash, and the survivors have cheated death, and thus death comes for them one by one, because no one cheats death. The movie consists of a variety of sneaky means of death. It's a fun film for the horror genre, but this episode also talked about cheating death, since not all of the passengers died in the crash. Whereas in the film, we never saw any sort of incarnation of death, in this episode we see the, you know, black demon mist thing. So they gave us some references in the episode, the first one being that of sulfur. And the presence, especially the smell of sulfur, is closely associated with the presence of demons. There are tales of sulfur-breathing demons, and other demons are thought to live in pits of sulfur and fire in hell. Next is the number 40. In fact, it shows up in several religious references. 40 days and 40 nights describes the period for which rain fell during Noah's flood. It's the period Moses spent on Mount Sinai receiving the Ten Commandments. Christ spent 40 days in the wilderness. In Western Christian cultures, Lent lasts for 40 days. It's the usual number of days in the time of mourning in Muslim cultures. It's also the number of days after death for which the ghosts of the dead hang around the site of their death, according to Russian beliefs. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I'd never really thought about the number 40 before. Of course, number 13 is always sort of one of the top superstitious numbers. And so let's talk about that. In this episode, it shows up as the gate number at the airport. But 13 is regarded as an unlucky number in many cultures. One hypothesis holds that 13 is a reflection of the human fear of the unknown, since it's the first number that cannot be enumerated by using our 10 fingers and 2 feet. Unreasoned fear of the number 13 is termed triskaidekaphobia. Due to this fear, some tall buildings have resorted to skipping the 13th floor simply by numbering it 14, although it's really still the 13th floor, or by designating the floor 12A or some other number system. Similarly, some streets do not contain a house number 13. The 13th of a month is likewise anonymous, particularly when it falls on a Friday. According to another interpretation, number 13 is unlucky because it's the number of full moons in a year. In the Christian religion, the number is considered significant since there were 13 present at the Last Supper. Also, if both Judas and Matthias are counted, there were 13 apostles. In the Jewish tradition, 13 signifies the age of maturity. A 13-year-old Jew is said to be bar mitzvah. 13 appears in other places in the Hebrew Bible, although not as often as other famous biblical numbers such as 7 and 12. And there are 13 principles of faith. Modern-day witches have reclaimed the number 13 as a lucky and significant number. This may be similar to witches reclaiming other previously negative terms and ideas associated with witchcraft, such as black cats, brooms, and even the term witch itself. In modern-day Wicca, 13 is considered the maximum size of a coven, and in some traditions, the ideal number of members. Amongst Chinese people, at least some Chinese people, it's regarded as a lucky number because it sounds similar to the Chinese word that means must be alive. In the Persian culture, 13 is also considered an unlucky number. On the 13th day of the Persian New Year, people consider staying at home unlucky and go outside for a picnic in order to ward off bad luck. Here's an interesting fact. In the East, the numbers 4 and 9 are considered unlucky due to their resemblance to the words for death and suffering. But if these numbers are added together, you get the traditionally unlucky number of the West, 13. Okay, so let's move on to a little bit of discussion. I really liked the change of roles of the two brothers in this episode. I know I've said that a lot lately, but we really see a lot of diversity going on. Dean is the scared one who is not able to play big brother, and Sam is able to relax a little bit and take the lead role. Sam is not so neurotic, and Dean is actually quite helpless. I think there's a lot of foreshadowing as well, with seeing the demonic characteristics and the fact that demons seem to know a lot of information, and we finally see some vulnerability of Dean and Sam's ability to take control. A lot of people, I think, they thought this episode was expendable or a throwaway and does not really advance the storyline, but I think the focus on a demon is important to future storylines, gives us some more insight into the boy's psychology, and we see some discussion about Dad and how proud he is of Sam. This is important to the future dynamics that we see of the family. With the new voice message on Dad's phone, we kind of see the torch pass to Dean, and Sam takes Dean's apprentice position in the family business. So I think there were some very subtle things going on. Overall, it didn't really advance the storyline, but I think we did see a few important features. So let's move on to the legend section. The first that we hear about are phantom travelers. Now, they're spirit travelers who are ghosts of humans and sometimes animals. The travelers are known to haunt particular roadways or modes of transportation, and there have been reports of phantom travelers on roads, boats, planes, trains, and stations associated. Some phantom travelers even appear as hitchhikers on lonely backroads. So it's kind of similar to the first episode that we saw with the lady, or the woman in white, and how they haunt waterways and roads and so forth. So I think there's actually some similarities here. Phantom travelers haunt specific locations and types of transportation due to a tragedy associated with those routes or vehicles. There have been reports of these travelers dating back to the 1600s in Europe and Russia, and they're still believed to exist today. All reports about phantom travelers have one thing in common. The spirits appear from nowhere and can just as suddenly disappear. So they mentioned Flight 401, and let's just talk about this for a minute. On the night of Friday, December 29th, 1972, Eastern Airlines Flight 401 was carrying 176 people as it neared its destination of the Miami airport. Flying the L-1011 jumbo jet were Captain Bob Loft and Second Officer Don Repo, who were engaged in routine landing procedures when a warning light flashed on the control panel indicating a problem with the landing gear. It's a possibility that this is neither... neither of them noticed that the plane was actually descending about 200 feet per minute faster than what they thought. Seconds later, the airliner slammed into the Florida Everglades, killing 101 people immediately. Both Captain Loft and Officer Repo survived the initial impact, but were mortally wounded. Captain Loft died before he could be pulled from the wreckage, and Officer Repo died a day later. The story of these men should have ended right there, but this is not to be the case. Eastern Airlines salvaged much of the stricken airplane and redistributed them among similar aircraft in their fleet. Soon, reports of ghostly hauntings began to come in from planes they had received spare parts from Flight 401. Most of the apparitions were recorded by Eastern's crew members, especially those on one particular plane of the airline's fleet. Repo's ghost appeared frequently both in the cockpit as well as in the galley, the area where flight attendants prepare passenger meals. He seemed to be especially concerned with flight safety and reportedly fixed a faulty oven circuit on one occasion. In other instances, he pointed out a potential fire hazard and a hydraulic leak. Loft's ghost has also been seen on various flights, usually sitting in first class or in the crew's cabin. A stewardess once confronted Loft, asking him what he was doing on the plane, as she had not seen him board and could not identify him in the passenger manifest. Receiving no reply, she reported it to her flight captain. He walked back with her and recognized Loft, who disappeared immediately in front of a dozen people. The airline was, at least outwardly, a bit skeptical of people who had reported the sightings and suggested they seek psychiatric counseling at the company's expense. Nevertheless, skeptical or not, the airline removed all of the salvaged parts of the ill-fated Flight 401 from the aircraft that they had been put into, and the paranormal sightings ended. Eventually, the sightings were turned into a best-selling book by newspaper reporter John G. Fuller. So the third one they talk about are the Japanese belief in disaster-causing demons. Now, demons in Japanese lore wander between the living and the dead. Some demons do good and some wreak havoc. Demons have supernatural powers, but they also have the magical ability to affect natural phenomena. According to Japanese belief, certain demons are behind certain disasters, both natural and man-made. One causes earthquakes, another causes diseases. So, we've already pretty much talked about that, but it's interesting. I love how they tie in different cultural things. So, that leads us to a couple final things, and then we'll be done for the night. The songs that they played in this episode were Paranoid by Black Sabbath, Working Man by Rush, and Some Kind of Monster by Metallica. The song of the night is Skyline of the Sea by Josh Woodward. You can go to his website at joshwoodward.com. He has a new CD out called Only Whispering. You can buy it online or download it for free at his site. I listened to it when I was traveling this weekend, and I really liked it. He plays acoustic music and seems inspired by Death Cab for Cutie. I hope you go support this artist. He's very talented, and I like to support independent music. The crack station with a man on all the exit doors. The damnation on the corners by the flimsy floors. Yeah, and from the top of the tree, the skyline of the sea. And from the top of the tree, the skyline of the sea. Silent on the empty hall, the cold steel on the temple of the shaken skull. Yeah, from the top of a tree, the skylight of the sea. And from the top of a tree, the skylight of the sea. I hope you enjoyed the song. So I have a listener challenge for you. Have any of you ever experienced a connection with the supernatural of any type? Psychic ability, telekinesis, ghost, whatever? If so, drop me a line and let me know. I've had a couple experiences that I'll share with you, and I'm currently doing some research behind the incidences to see what evidence or speculation may account for the incidences. So just let me know if you have any ideas or encounters that you would like to talk about, and I'd be happy to incorporate them. And that's it for this episode. The next episode review will cover Bloody Mary. And have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the WB. The music brought to you tonight is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.